Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
First time in 32 years, won the World Series. And I certainly hope that all Buffalonians, Western New Yorkers, will soon get to enjoy the same feeling I had last night with the Dodgers having won the series, with the Bills winning the Super Bowl, or the Sabres winning the Stanley Cup, because it is really nice. with that, we're here for the October 28th Erie County Update. We have a few things to talk about, including, of course, COVID-19. Joined by Kendra Schmidt of Deaf Access Services, as well as Dr. Gail Burstein, our health commissioner from the Erie County Department of Health. And we'll start with COVID data. As of the close of business yesterday, there were now 12,485 total positive cases in Erie County, individualized cases, these are not repeat cases, out of 510,149 specimens tested. 717 people have died from COVID-19 since the beginning of this, including four since October 19th. Two in the hospital, two outside of the hospital, I believe nursing home settings. And I do offer my deepest condolences to the friends and family of those who've died as a result of COVID-19. It's very sad that we still are having individuals dying in our community, nevertheless still contracting the illness. Once again, with regards to the deaths, they are all lab-confirmed cases prior to the death. So while they were living, they actually had a test done that proved that they were COVID-19. There are no presumed positive cases, and there are no post-mortem cases. These are all before they had died and proved that they had COVID-19. On October 26, there were 41 individuals admitted to Erie County hospitals for COVID-19. 14 of them are in the ICU, and 10 individuals had an airway assist. This is Western New York's numbers for October 26th. We've been talking about this for some time now, about how we're seeing an increase in the number of cases in the other Western New York counties, or the counties that make up the Western New York region for New York State's purposes. That is, of course, Erie County, Niagara, Chautauqua, Cattaraugus, and Allegheny counties. And basically in the last week, we've seen a switch that we have never seen before, which is more than 50% of all hospitalized cases are in the other counties. And they are primarily in the southern counties. There's generally been a handful in Niagara County, but we know that there are some cases in the other counties. And having had conversations with leaders from the other counties in the southern part of Western New York, we do know that there are individuals from those counties that are in hospitals not only in Erie County, but also in Erie, Pennsylvania. So the numbers of individuals that are hospitalized do not necessarily represent all Western New Yorkers who are hospitalized, because we do know that there is at least a handful, less than five, but there were a few folks who, because of the hospital networks down there that are primarily UPMC, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center related hospitals, they would then take them to a higher level of care at in Erie, Pennsylvania. So this is very concerning that we have seen higher numbers of hospitalizations in all of the other Western New York counties as compared to Erie. Only 47% of those, the 87 that were in the hospital on October 26th. We're in Erie County. So it is concerning, and it is something that we've been talking about with regards to the increased rates in the southern tier and the impact it would have. And we're seeing, once again, the highest numbers that we've had in hospitalizations since early June. I think it's June 10th, actually. So that is very concerning, and we do know there's a few other, less than five, but a handful of patients that are actually Western New York residents who are in hospitals in Erie, Pennsylvania for a higher level of care. And then here's the Erie County data for the 26th, 41 hospitalized in Erie County hospitals, 14 of whom require to be in the ICU unit, and 10 of those individuals in airway assist. As we talked about, we've actually had seven straight days of no deaths in the hospitals dating back to the two on October 19th. COVID-19 cases confirmed by age and gender for the week ending October 24th. Once again, this was static, and I shouldn't say static, was even among most of these bars that you see on the screen for a long time until approximately a month, month and a half ago, in which we saw a big jump up with regards to the 20 to 29-year-olds, and once again, that is the case. So this is the week ending of October 24th, and you'll see that the largest age group, once again, is the 20 to 29 age group, and the second highest is the 10 to 19 age group. So we are seeing COVID cases those that are either in school, such as high school or elementary or primary, but also potentially in college as well. And then once again, the breakdown for the week ending of October 24th, the largest percentage was the 20 to 29 age group. There were 401 cases for the week ending October 24th. 93 of them were 20 to 29, 19.7% of them, or 79 cases were age 0 to 19. And then you see the big drop off as you get older, because once again, we believe people above the age of at least 60 are taking precautions to protect themselves from COVID-19. So 43% of our cases from the week ending October 24th were under the age of 30. And then on the residents for the cases that were October 24th, 43% of those cases were in the city of Buffalo residents, and 57% were Erie County outside of the city of Buffalo, which is a little bit higher than what the population normally is for Buffalo as compared to the rest of the county, but also is comparable to what we've seen in weeks past. Now, the top 10 zip codes by positivity rates, I'm going to talk a little bit, then turn it over to Dr. Burstein, because we are really watching zip codes as a result of the New York State's cluster initiative to determine where the hotspots are. So we've been watching this for a number of weeks now, and you can see with some of the numbers we have here, there are weeks in which certain zip codes are higher than others. For the week ending of October 24th, the highest zip code was 14212, though there was not a tremendous amount of cases received from that zip code. And we think a number of the cases were family related. So we've actually spoken to the New York State Department of Health, and we know New York State is monitoring these zip code areas to determine if we start falling into the yellow, orange, or red cluster zones, as New York State has determined. Thankfully, we have not had huge numbers like we've seen in other places. We have been monitoring. We were very concerned about the 14213 zip code not too long ago, and its numbers thankfully have gone down. So that's a good thing. Depending on how many people you test in a week in a zip code, it could have your numbers could be slightly skewed, because if you're only testing 100 people, but you're testing two families of which there's 15 people in the two families and they all test positive, you're going to have an exceptionally high transmission rate and infection rate. So I'll turn it over to Dr. Burstein and talk a little bit more about that and the other things going forward as I give this a little spray. But we are monitoring zip codes because we want to stem the tide of having a microcluster being identified in Erie County, which would then require shutting down of certain services. In the yellow, there's a heavy look, so to speak. Once you get in the orange cluster zone, then you got to start reducing services and shutting down services. And in the reds, you're shutting down in-person dining, All bars must close, barbershops and beauticians must close. They would close movie theaters, of course, which just opened up. So we want to avoid that in all possibility, and that's why we're monitoring this and working with our partners to try to stem the tide in these zip codes. So, Dr. Burstein.
Thank you. Thanks. So as the county executive mentioned, that we are very closely following these zip codes that light up, again, because we want to make sure that we understand the dynamics of what we're seeing with these high numbers of each of the zip codes so we can take the appropriate actions and work with the state just to help them understand what's going on. So we again, as the county executive alluded to, we could be in one of these zip codes or part of these zip codes could be designated as a microcluster area. So we want to work with the state to make sure that that doesn't happen. You can see that the proportion of positive tests by zip code fluctuates a considerable amount by week. So each week there can be a huge variation in that percentage. And again, it's really based on the proportions of the number of people tested. So the denominators are relatively small because it's just one zip code. And so just a few additional positive cases can really boost that percentage of positives. And we've investigated this, and many of these cases are the same people who live under the same roof in the same household, so several different families where everybody's testing together and they all test positive, which is not surprising. Or we're also seeing students in universities and colleges, or the college age, the 18 to 22, as we know, is a high risk age group. So many of these high numbers can be explained by those circumstances. So we are watching and working with the state. So again, here is the familiar graph looking at the number of tests done per week and the proportion of positive tests. So the number of tests done are the bars in the blue and the yellow, and the proportion of positive tests are the line in the black. And you can see that we are holding steady in between 1-2%. So last week we had a slightly higher number of total cases, and we had a slightly higher number of proportion of positive tests. And we'll have to see what happens this week. We're about halfway through, but we are monitoring that. Comparing our proportion of positive tests and the number of tests done and the number that were positives, for the past 6 weeks. And you can see, we are having fluctuations. In general, I think the trend is positive that we're having more people testing. So testing is a key tool of keeping our numbers down. That's because we want to identify everybody who is infected and put them in isolation and identify who all their close contacts are and put them in quarantine to break the chain of transmission in the community. So we have, last week we tested almost 30,000 Erie County residents, which is where we want to be, and in even higher numbers. We did find a slightly increased number of cases, and that increased the proportion of positive tests. However, you can see that in general, we've been seeing anywhere between the 1-2% area. And then looking at our antibody testing, so remember that is looking at the individuals who have been exposed and mounted a detectable antibody response. So here, again, we're looking at by weeks for the past 6 weeks, the number of antibody tests done, the number of people positive, and the percent positive. So you can see that there's actually kind of a decline in interest. Not as many people are getting tested every week, so the denominator is not as large. And we're probably seeing more of a bias sample of people who are getting tested, that the numbers are small and the proportion of positive tests are greater, so that is probably likely explain that people who probably knew that they were infected in the past and went to get testing, a higher number of those. However, overall, our antibody positivity rate is still only about 7%. So that means that many people in our community are still vulnerable to infection. That means we still have to to forge on, continue on with our preventive behaviors of wearing masks, physical distancing, staying away from small gatherings. It's still not snowing yet. So if you're going to have any type of get together with a small amount of people that don't live in your household, try to do it outside and washing your hands and being as vigilant as possible. And please think twice about travel. We are seeing people infected who are returning from the high-risk states, which we'll be talking about, and travel is a big risk factor in Erie County. So now we're going to look at the mortality data, and again, this is very sad, looking at the demographics of the lives lost to COVID-19, and this is looking at the mortality in Erie County from COVID-19 by age on the x-axis, and then by gender, where females are yellow and males are in blue. So you can see, again, hasn't changed very much. Unfortunately, we only had a few deaths this past week, whereas still the predominant of our COVID-19 victims are our seniors, people in their 70s and up, and we're seeing a slightly higher proportion of females compared to males. So for people that want to get tested, and we strongly encourage testing, you can get either a diagnostic test or an antibody test by calling our Erie County COVID hotline at 858-2929 to schedule. We've been very busy with people requesting scheduling for tests. So if you may be on hold for a little while, and please be patient. We are hiring more call takers and training them, and we're trying to be as user-friendly as much as we can in the county. So there, again, remember, there is no cost. You don't have to worry about insurance. This is paid for through Erie County dollars. You don't need any type of physician's order or laboratory rec. And these clinics are throughout Erie County. So remember, these are by appointment only for the diagnostic testing. So if you really need to call and make an appointment, and if you just show up, there's a very good chance that you will be turned away. So please call to make an appointment. For the antibody testing, you can call to make an appointment. You can actually schedule online at our Erie County COVID test website, or you can just show up for the antibody test, not the diagnostic test. So for our regular diagnostic tests with our reverse transcriptase PCRs, we are offering those three times weekly in Erie County. We're in Williamsville on Mondays, Orchard Park on Wednesdays, and in the city of Buffalo on Thursdays. We are also offering the Abbott ID Now point of care testing. So that is what we call like a rapid test, where the results are available in 15 minutes after you put the specimen into the machine. And these are reserved just for people who are in school, either their students or their staff, where there are in-person classes, who are symptomatic and they are already not in quarantine. Because a test result for somebody who is already in quarantine is not going to change their quarantine period. If they're in quarantine for 14 days, whether they have if they have a negative test result, that's not going to get them out any and get them back into in-person learning any sooner. So these are, again, just reserved for people who are symptomatic, who are attending in-person classes from pre-K to grade 12. So again, we just want to emphasize that. We are cut down our antibody testing to just once a week. So our next antibody testing clinic is coming up at the Sheridan Park Fire Department. And then we are also going to be offering some free flu vaccine. And there, again, are no appointments necessary. So we just want everybody to think about getting anybody tested and getting their flu vaccine. So, again, as I mentioned earlier, that we are reserving the point-of-care test, the ID Now test, for symptomatic students and school staff in grades pre-K through grades 12 who are in-person classrooms. So we are offering this testing 5 days a week. So every day that there is school, we're going to be offering this testing. So we have some holidays coming up where the school is not going to be in session, such as Veterans Day and Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving holiday. So we will not be offering these testing and during those days because the students won't have to get back into the classroom because there won't be any classes. But we are doing this regularly on Monday through Fridays in three locations throughout Erie County, and people again have to call up for an appointment. We are getting full. These are you can imagine with respiratory crud season in full blown gear. Then there are a lot of people that have sniffles and other respiratory symptoms that could be from COVID-19. It could be from other viruses. So these appointments are getting booked. If they are booked, you can still make an appointment for our regular PCR testing. We're happy to test. And if none of that works out, we still have great information on our where tests are available on our COVID test sites website, on our Erie County Health Department website, and that includes also information about pharmacies. I know that the urgent care centers are gearing up to offer point of care testing. They're not quite there yet, but they are getting ready to do that. So again, we will be expanding access to testing even more in Erie County. We're very fortunate we have this asset. So you just click on a dot and a little box will pop up and give you all the information about the testing sites. And again, we are public health sanitarians from environmental health are still investigating complaints about bars or restaurants or fitness centers or now movie theaters. So if you have any concerns about any of those businesses, you can give us a call at 716-961-6800. I can say with looking at this past weekend's report of the inspections, that are, I'm really happy to say that many of our Erie County dining and bar facilities and wedding venues are in compliance, and we're really not seeing many inspections where we're not finding any type of violations where the facilities are not adhering to COVID-19 emergency orders. Their facilities are doing a better job, and we really appreciate that. Also, people can contact New York State Compliance Line at either call at 833-208-4160 or text at 855-904-5036. And any other types of complaints or businesses, you can contact New York PAWS either by phone or on their online form, or even more directly, you can contact your municipality, the building inspector, and lodge your complaint, and hopefully they can help you out. So, talking about travel, as I mentioned earlier, we are seeing quite a number of cases that are in Erie County of COVID-19 that are linked to travel. Unfortunately, most states in the United States now are on the governor's travel advisories list. There's only a handful of states that are not on that advisory list, such as Hawaii, Maine, New Hampshire, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. Although the next states are not on the travel advisory list, we are strongly discouraging non-essential travel because they have very, very high numbers. And those states are contiguous to New York State, so Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts. So again, they're not officially on the travel advisory. However, those states have very, very high numbers, and just because there are so many people that cross over every day for work or for some type of business or to go to school, it would be very difficult to impose any type of official travel restrictions. But again, we are begging people to please, if you're thinking about traveling for even a family get together for Thanksgiving or for a sports tournament, please think twice. We are seeing people getting infected for travel. If you know somebody who's traveled or want to self-report, you can lodge a complaint or a report on our Erie County travel website form, or you can call the state. And we know that there are people from the National Guard, I believe, are at the airports to collect information from people traveling from states on the governor's travel advisory about their travel. So either somebody from New York State or the Erie County Health Department will be contacting those individuals. If people are driving through or taking a bus, we don't really have any other way to catch them. So we're really hoping that people will be honest and report themselves and self-quarantine for 14 days to try to prevent any type of exposure. If you're worried about exposure, again, please get tested. However, you still have to quarantine. We still really need you to quarantine for 14 days to make sure that we don't have community transmission. So Halloween is this Saturday. Every municipality has different rules about what they're going to allow or recommend for Halloween. So you can check on your municipality's website for what they're recommending. You know, there are a lot of different activities that you can engage in with your kids for Halloween that are safe. The safest is, staying indoors and playing games or dress up or with the costumes or carving pumpkins, inside with your close family members or doing a little scavenger hunt, walking through the neighborhood, looking at all the different type of Halloween decorations and checking off the list of what you find. So we have some good information and suggestions on our Erie County Health Department website and on the New York State Health Department website. So, really just think about it. Also you have to think about other safety concerns besides COVID-19, costume safety. Don't want anything to catch on fire. Many of the costumes are like black, and so you want to make sure that you're very careful if you're driving on Halloween night. And then also, reminding about, candy safety and kids now, like, putting their hand into a bowl of candy that other people have touched is probably not a good idea. So, think twice about that. We'll post this online, and these are some suggestions of some fun things, fun activities you can engage in with your kids for Halloween. And then it's flu vaccine season. So we know that there is still a great supply of flu vaccine, all different types, the regular flu vaccine that protects against four strains of influenza, the nasal spray, the high-dose vaccine for our seniors. Those are all in good supplies. We know the primary care offices, both adult and pediatric, have great supplies, so you can contact them. The pharmacies have great supplies. And also there are clinics, other types of clinics, throughout the county. So Kaleida Health is offering flu vaccine for adults. We are working with our partners, community partners, to offer free vaccine clinics. And so we are working with, the Buffalo Public Schools. When they have their grab and go for distributing lunches for students, we have staff stationed at some of those to give out flu vaccines. And then also we're partnering with different churches and community organizations in the community, and that information is on our website that we're going to be offering a free flu vaccine. So please get a flu vaccine. If you haven't gotten one before because you think, I don't get the flu, I don't need one, this is the year to try. This is the year to do it. We don't need to see flu and COVID-19 in our community, because we know we will see COVID-19 in our community. So we really want to do everything we can to avoid all these different serious respiratory infections. Both can lead to serious illness, both can lead to hospitalizations, and both can lead to death. So anybody 6 months and up, get a flu vaccine, please. And I will turn it over to our county executive. Thanks.
Thank you, Doctor. I want to give an update on the Louisville Erie CARES Act Rental and Mortgage Assistance Program. $10 million is available as of October 23rd. More than 1,618 have applied. We probably have more than, because we've had a few extra days. So as of the 23rd, 1,618 have applied. We've had a few more since then. 1,474 were rental applications seeking $3.4 million in assistance. There was 141 mortgage applications seeking about $1 million in assistance. Applications, of course, are available online at 211wny.org or 211. You must apply by November 15th. We put a cutoff date. Must apply by November 15th. The goal is to have all the money out the door by the end of November. And if you do not apply by November 15th, it's going to be too late. Remember, there's a prohibition against evictions. It does not prohibit or is not, it does not require you to not pay. You have to pay your rent. You have to pay your mortgage. So while there's a prohibition on evictions from both the federal and state governments, it is a prohibition on evictions. Eventually, they're going to evict you if you do not pay. People seem to think that I'm never going to have to pay and I can stay in my house, my home, where I have a lease. And the answer is no, you're going to get evicted. Take advantage of the program. Mortgages, the same thing. If you're not paying your mortgages, you're eventually going to get foreclosed. I do not know why. We've talked to primarily landlords are saying it. People think they're going to be able to stay in their house forever without paying it. And that's not the case. So please take advantage of the program. You can learn more about it at 211WNY.org, or you can call 211. Livable Area CARES Act child care funding, $7 million is in child care subsidy. We will be shutting that down also by the second week of November. Many families qualify but not applying. We're starting to get more actually applying now, which is a good thing. We've also had more people try out and sign up for the virtual learning centers, which we'll get to. But if you are a family of four, you can still make up to $81,000 a year and qualify for the child care funding program and receive assistance to help pay for your children's child care. Call our Department of Social Services daycare unit at 858-8953. The Erie County Virtual Learning Centers are open to all kindergarten through eighth grade students in every school district across Erie County. The latest report I had is approximately 50% of the slots are filled. We were shooting for about 65%. We're at about 50% right now. So we know there's a lot more parties that are taking advantage of it. I believe in the city of Buffalo, the number is actually over 50%. But it is offered at no cost for those at or below the New York State median income, which once again for a family of four is about $81,000 a year. So there's lots of folks out there who qualify for this. They're not taking advantage of it. You can call 877-6666 for more information or talk to your school district and they'll let you know about the virtual learning center in their community. The Back to Business Grant Program has been so far a huge success with regards to applications. We have a $20 million relief fund. We will probably be adding a few more dollars into that. I haven't figured out what yet. It's going to depend on what's available with the rental and mortgage assistance program, what's available with child care. But 43 North has received more than 1,000 applications. They are going to be processing after Monday, November 2nd. If you do not get your application in before November 2nd, you're going to be done. So if you decide you want to send it in November 12th, it's too late. You have to get your application in. You can apply online and learn more about the program at backtobizgrants.org. Please apply as soon as possible because it is going to get shut down as a close of business on November 2nd. A little information on early voting. Early voting through yesterday evening. There's 37 early voting centers open across all of Erie County. 70,017 have early voted. That's 11% of all registered voters. I do know that there are tens of thousands of mail-in ballots that have been received back by the Board of Elections, such that it's really around 20% of all Erie County voters have voted, either early voting or through mail-in ballots. Early voting will continue through November 1st, which is Sunday. Weekdays, early voting centers are open noon to 9. Weekends, noon to 6. To find out more, you can call the Board of Elections at 858-8951, or you can go to the link that you see on the screen. Just type in Erie County Board of Elections early voting, and you'll find a listing of all 37 sites. What you see in the picture there is actually the tablet that's used. You go in, you talk to the person. If you've got your postcard that you receive from the Board of Elections, it speeds up the process. If you don't, you don't need it. But you're basically a touch screen, and then your ballot's printed for you, and it's just like normal. You take your ballot, you fill it out, and you put it in the ballot scanner. And we want as many people as possible to vote early to take advantage of it because we don't want to see mass long lines across all of these voting districts that we have across Erie County. We'd much rather see, as they have more time to do it, people vote early at the early voting centers. Now, this is a question that our contact tracers have received recently. How do you vote if you're COVID-19 positive? Because you got a quarantine. The time to apply for an absentee ballot by mail through the Board of Elections where they send a ballot to you expired. But you can still get an absentee ballot, just like any individual who may have suffered an illness but can't vote on Election Day can get an absentee ballot. It has to be done in person, though. You can request, you can go to the Board of Elections site and print out the absentee ballot form. The link is on the bottom of the screen. I'll talk about it in a second. You can have someone take that absentee ballot application down to the Board of Elections office at 134 West Eagle Street by 5 p.m. on November 2nd, Monday. You then have to fill out your absentee ballot and either return it to the Board of Elections by Monday or put it in the mail and ensure that it is postmarked no later than November 3rd. So we've had some questions. How do I vote if I'm quarantined and I can't leave my house? You can have someone get an absentee ballot for you from the Board of Elections. You then have to do one of two things, either have someone return it in person or drop it in the mail and make certain that it's postmarked no later than Election Day. For more information, please call 858-8951. This is no different than what we normally would have. You've heard me talk about Aunt Jenny before, but let's say Aunt Jenny fell and broke her leg and now she's in the hospital and can't vote, or she's at home and she's not ambulatory. Aunt Jenny could have someone come and get a ballot for her at the Board of Elections. You do have to fill out the application for it. It is available online, and the Board of Elections will have a ballot for that individual, which can then be returned either in person or by mail, but it has to be postmarked no later than November 3rd. And the address, so that everyone out there knows it, is elections.erie.gov/absentee. So you can actually get an application to request an absentee ballot be provided to you, fill it out, have someone deliver it to the Board of Elections at 134 West Eagle Street in downtown Buffalo. They will hand deliver to that person an absentee ballot, to which you then take it back to the person, Aunt Jenny or whomever it is. Aunt Jenny fills out the absentee ballot. Either the person returns it to the Board of Elections or you drop it in the mail and have it postmarked no later than Election Day, November 3rd. So with that, we'll open it up to questions. Marley.
To clarify, I know that you were saying that you've become aware that a handful of people are going down to Erie, Pennsylvania. Last week we were talking about people in the southern tier counties coming up to Erie County for treatment. Is that still happening?
There's still two or three that are in, or at least as of a couple of days ago, were in Erie County hospitals. And then we've also learned a couple, less than a handful, that are going or at least transferred from Cattaraugus, Chautauqua, Allegheny to a hospital in Erie, Pennsylvania.
This is actually a question that you heard, Dr. Bernstein. And obviously learning more and more about the virus every day, but at this point, where are we at in, as far as like what long-term damage does the virus look like it potentially be having on people, like heart damage along those lines?
So the question is, what type of long-term medical sequela can people who suffer from a COVID-19 infection develop as a result of infection? So, you know, again, we're learning more and more. I mean, this is not just a respiratory virus. So though the symptoms of COVID-19 are predominantly respiratory and people predominantly suffer, inflammation in the lungs, we still know that it can go to other organs. We're seeing, especially with this as a risk for athletes, infection in the heart. I know as a pediatrician, for kids who are engaged in sports, who are infected with COVID-19 and are symptomatic, you know, they need to have some level of cardiac evaluation, after they recover from their COVID-19 illness to get them, to make them get them cleared to return to sports. We also know that it can affect the nervous system and other organs. Again, we're learning more and more. I think that what we're seeing, more commonly in terms of long-term sequela are the heart and the brain. I mean, people, I'm sure you've heard reports of they feel like they're in a fog or they can't concentrate or they're just really fatigued for weeks after they're officially recovered. And again, we feel that that is a neurologic consequence of COVID-19. So it's it's not something to be taken lightly. It's a very, very serious virus.
Dr. Burstein, you briefly touched on it with these youth sports tournaments that are out of state and how you're suggesting that people don't do it, but there's still some confusion among people, and I know the Department of Health recently released additional information about it, but just to hear you say some of it, what should people do if they're traveling out of state for, say, a one-day tournament in Pennsylvania or Ohio? What's the protocol for these people?
Sure. So the question is, what can I comment about with youth sports, leagues or traveling out of state for tournaments? First of all, for many of the sports that people are traveling for, those are considered high-risk sports, high-risk contact by New York Forward. And actually, those teams aren't even supposed to practice, let alone have any games or scrimmages or tournaments, and they're definitely not supposed to compete either out of state themselves or bring other teams into our community to compete out of state. We also know that, again, there are contiguous states that in like Pennsylvania and Connecticut and New Jersey where teams may choose to send players where we know they have very, very high rates and is very dangerous. And some parents are interpreting those one-day trips as the New York Forward allows for people driving through states of high risk and maybe just getting off the thruway to get something to eat or to fill up on gas or to relieve themselves, bio break. That is very different than people staying in an area for a full day and participating in a tournament and sharing locker rooms, coming in close contact, going out to have meals, families, spectators congregate in type settings. I mean, that's a really a recipe for a super spreader event, especially in states where we're seeing a high prevalence. So again, even though Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey, and now Massachusetts are not in the official travel advisory, the governor is strongly discouraging non-essential travel. And competing in youth sports tournaments is included in that non-essential travel category. We don't want to see disease people get infected by engaging in these activities and then coming back infected and spreading more disease in our community. We want to keep the schools open. We want to keep the businesses open. We want to keep our numbers down. And I think our county executive has something to add to that.
I would note when these youth sport activities were allowed, it specifically said there's not supposed to be travel outside the region. You're not even supposed to have a team from Buffalo going to Syracuse. Nevertheless, a team from Buffalo going to Pittsburgh. And so we've confirmed that with the state. I know not a lot of people are happy about it, but those are the rules. And we've had additional pressure put on us by the state to fine if not individuals, the associations. So that's why I warned earlier this week the associations are at risk, and a fairly substantial fine could shut down these associations because one of their coaches wants to take the team, or the parents are like, we have to take the team, we have to play, we're going to go to Philly. You can't even go from Buffalo to Rochester to play. Nevertheless, go from Buffalo to other places. That's what the rules say. And as having coached hockey for 10 years, I understand the concern, and people want to have their kids play, but they're putting themselves and the entire community at risk for receiving COVID-19 and spreading it again. And the rules are pretty clear. They can't do it. Next question.
Does it only apply to high-risk sports or all sports?
There are limitations based on high-risk and medium-risk sports. So there's certain high-risk sports, there's some that are considered much lower risk. That there is a different standard for high-risk sports with regards to games, competition, and travel. Sandra?
Can you talk talk a little bit about the potential for a cluster that would fall into one of the yellow, orange, or red zones here in Erie County? It looks like the zip code of 14212 is one where there has been an elevated percentage of 3% or greater, and I'm curious to know what your feelings are about that possibly being identified as a community that might get the state's attention.
Well, the question was in regards to zip codes and the potentials for clusters and getting the state's attention. Well, I'll say this, it already has the state's attention. These higher zip codes have the state attention, and we've been in contact with the state to show exactly why it may not rise to the level of a cluster. And 14212 is a kind of a good example of it. We're not getting we're not getting thousands of results back a week from this zip code, and we can sometimes identify that okay, this is related to a family outbreak, as per se a just general community spread. And if we saw any zip codes general community spread, then I think we'd be in a situation where we would have already had a cluster declared by the state.
But that's not what you're seeing at 14212. It looks, seems like it's family related or some sort of interrelations.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, it's, thanks. Here I am. So 14212, we've investigated more than half of those cases are associated with just a few households, you know, individual households. So we really think this is more, there are just a few families that had bad luck, and they're, you know, larger families, and one person got infected and everybody got infected. And again, you can see that these are just zip codes, so the denominator is very small. So just a small change in the number of positive tests will greatly increase or decrease the proportion of positive tests. So 14212, for example. So this past week, it was over 6% of the tests done in the 14212 zip code were positive, where the week before, only 3% of all the tests done were positive. So, you know, again, you have to look at the whole picture, and the state's looking, and we're looking, and that's why we are aggressive about investigating, you know, what are the sources of these infections, and working with the state to help them understand what the source is, and, you know, and so it won't be considered a one of these, you know, microclusters, and we'll have to shut down businesses and schools. So, and however, if there is an outbreak, if there is community transmission, you know, it may be prudent to close things down, chill things out for a little while, like they've done in other counties. We'll see. But again, these numbers are completely dependent on our behavior. So if we continue masking, physical distancing, staying away from large gatherings, avoiding travel to high-risk areas, washing our hands, then we will see low numbers and we won't have to worry as much about these clusters. It's all up to us.
Yeah, this might be for Dr. Burstein. I want to ask about the reporting process for new COVID cases at private colleges. Are they required, as far as any mandates are concerned, to contact students and faculty once there is a new case? Or is it just them contacting the state health department? Is that all they got to do?
The question is, what is the procedure for notifying contacts for students and staff in private colleges? So, you know, it's really the same procedures of case identification and contact tracing and notification for public, private schools, you know, any type of situation. So there's a positive test that gets reported to the state through their surveillance system, electronic clinical laboratory reporting system. Then the health department get the local health departments receive that information. You know, hopefully the student will put their local address, so we will get that. And then we work with the school to and the student or the staff to try to figure out who their close contacts are in school and what type of classrooms are they? Are they virtual? Are they in person? What's the duration? You know what's the size of the classroom? And from that we determine if who needs to be in quarantine for 14 days. So again, it's really the same procedure everywhere. It's the same formula, and we know that this works. Case identification, contact tracing, and notification is a bread and butter public health tool. We use that with sexually transmitted infections. We use that with hepatitis A outbreaks. We use that with any type of outbreaks, and it works. And so you can see that it's working here. We're keeping our numbers down most days below 2%, and secondary prevention and primary prevention is really based on our behaviors, and we have to forge through it.
Because I know for SUNY schools, when there's a new infection, they send out like a mass email to students and faculty. Is that something they just decided to do, or was that a directive to all colleges, public and private?
So the question is the notification process to other people in higher ed if there is a case? And I really think that's up to the institution about, you know, who they notify and how they notify.
Mostly from nursing homes or small family gatherings, or do we not know yet?
The question is, do we know if the cases in the Southern Tier are from nursing homes or small family gatherings? We've heard the preponderance of them are from nursing homes, but there are communities, there's community spread otherwise. For each county, it would be best to address it to that, but in every 4 o'clock every other day, we have a leaders call for Western New York, and we discuss our issues, and I do know that the preponderance of them our nursing home, but there is community spread elsewhere. So, Madison, did you have a question? Or?
No.
Okay. I'm going to go with Sandra then. We'll go back to Marley and then.
I had a question about testing capacity for Erie County. Overall, where do we stand as far as with the numbers looking like they might be creeping up over the cold weather months? How many tests can Erie County do now, both PCR tests and rapid tests? We feel confident about the testing capacity we have. Is there much of a wait these days if you want to get one? And I'm sorry. And the other question I had was about the daily positivity rate. It was up at 3% as you reported yesterday. And I didn't know if that was just a one-time blip or if we're concerned that there was something that's been happening to cause for that elevated
level. To the first question, well, I'll get the second question. First, second question was on positivity rate. Yesterday was 3%, was a one-time blip. We do have the rates for yesterday. Those were 1.3%, I believe. Yeah, 1.3%, so it appears to have been a one-time blip, which is a good thing because you're always going to have that. That's why we really want to look at seven-day rolling averages as compared to one particular day. So the results for yesterday were about 1.3%. The other question was in regards to testing and testing capacity. Do we have enough tests? We did receive, I think, 2,500 rapid test kits last week from New York State. We certainly have enough rapid tests for the next few weeks. We are doing approximately 800 rapid tests a week. We also have thousands of test kits available for the traditional PCR test, and we have that available for the upcoming weeks. The traditional PCR reagents come from the CDC, and I believe that they have sufficient supply for the upcoming weeks as well. What happens in January and February, I can't really talk about right now, but we feel comfortable that we're covered for the next 3 or 4 weeks at least. I was going to go to Marley next.
You mentioned wanting people to come out to early voting as much as possible so we don't see crowds. We are seeing crowds at early voting. Any concerns with that, making our infection rate rise, any precautions people can take, that sort of thing?
The question was with regards to seeing crowds at early voting, is there a concern with regards to increasing the infection rate? Well, first off, everyone's got to wear a mask. We want you to try to stay as far away from the other person as possible. We know it's not always easy when you're waiting in a line, but we have been hearing reports of people wearing masks. It's my understanding that there was one elections inspector that was hired for early voting that didn't want to wear a mask, and that person was fired by the Board of Elections on the spot, not tolerated. Why they even applied for the job if they knew they had to wear a mask and they refused to wear one is beyond me. But good job by Commissioners Moore and Zellner to take care of that problem. It comes down to this. We want as many people to vote as possible. We want everybody who can vote. And we're seeing a very big turnout. I'm expecting one of the largest turnouts in Erie County history, not just as a percentage of voters, but overall voters. And there are more opportunities to vote than ever before, instead of having it all on Election Day. We have 9 days of early voting. We're in the fifth day right now. Early voting goes straight through Sunday, and then it ends, and there's a day off, and then there's election day. And the one of the things I also tell folks about early voting is, who knows what's going to happen on election day weather-wise. It's looking like it's going to be cold. What if a snowstorm hits? What if we get ice storm, sleet? Then you had a few days to early vote beforehand in which it was nice weather. Take advantage of the nice weather and go vote. Early voting sites, there's 37 of them. You can vote at any single one. We know that it's been busy in particular locations, especially in the town of Amherst, some in Buffalo, town of Cheektowaga. But at various times, other ones are empty. And you can always take a ride. Go down to North Collins. Go to Alden. Go to Sardinia, if you really want to go for a pretty good ride from the city of Buffalo. But they've had less than 10-minute waits at most of those sites. And you can vote at any single one. I voted 2 days ago at the site, St. Columba Bridget Church in the Ellicott District, even though I live in the Delaware District. You can go to any site. Doesn't matter. You don't have to stay in your town. You don't have to stay in your council district. We just want people to vote. And if they wear masks, if they follow the rules, I think we'll be okay. And it was good. When I was standing in line, it was a little late. Wait, where I was about a half hour to 40 minutes. But people were good. People were pretty much kept to themselves. You had a little talk about the election, a little talk about COVID, but everyone had a mask on. Everyone was happy to be there, and they were following the rules, which is a good thing. Michael.
Mark, the governor today said that county governments had the power to mandate mask wearing in schools. Mm-hmm. Just seeing if you plan on having schools within Erie County have to wear their masks.
The question was, the governor earlier today allowed local governments, including counties, to mandate mask wearing in schools, and do you intend to do that? And the answer is yes. Most public schools already mandate mask wearing. There seems to be some issues with private schools. It is our intention to do that within reason. So we're going to talk to the superintendents, and I think we're going to probably mandate what's already being followed by most of the public schools, which is mandatory masks. But we do know that there's some private schools that we've heard reports of aren't necessarily following it at every moment. And we think it's appropriate. Dr. Burstein and I have talked about this. Now that the governor has given us the power to do it, We've done a very good job of managing COVID-19 over the past few months. There's huge increases across the country. I mean, I feel really bad for the people in Utah, the Plains, Wisconsin, Missouri. I mean, they're running out of hospital beds already. El Paso is doing right now what we plan to do, but we didn't have to do, which is convert its convention center to a field hospital. Why is it that's like that? It's because people are not wearing their masks in those areas. They're not following mask mandates. We've been pretty good as a region, especially when we're in a public location where a lot of other people are that we haven't been around. So it is something that we are going to take advantage of. And I don't want to see here what I'm hearing about what's happening elsewhere. Dr. Burstein and I were on a conference call last week with Dr. Deborah Birx of the Federal Task Force. Actually, it was a Zoom call. It was a very small call, county leaders. I had an opportunity to ask Dr. Birx question about the vaccine process. And she said some really, really scary things about what's happening in the Great Plains. Like 75% of some of these towns are infected. By the time they get there and try to stem the tide, it's too late. We looked at each other and we were like, oh my Lord. Because if you had 75% of the people in Erie County infected, we know just in a death rate alone of just 1%, I mean, that's thousands of people who will die. And we've had a little over 700 so far. So I don't want to see anything about what's happening in the Great Plains and the parts of the Midwest where people just haven't been wearing masks. And now it's being spread like wildfire. The hospitals are being inundated. And we faced a really bad situation earlier, but nothing like that. And I think we've been able to handle and stem the tide because we've been following the rules. So, yes, we will, getting back to your original question, we will be issuing an order in due course in regards to mandatory mask wearing in schools.
Just as a quick follow-up to that, you had mentioned some private schools are having issues with masks and kids and maybe faculty, staff not wearing them. Are you willing to say which private schools they are, and frankly, you know, how would Erie County enforce it? Would the Department of Health just go into these private schools and say you're not wearing masks, we're shutting you down?
We have received reports. We have sent our staff in to check and to confirm and to basically sort of drop the hammer.
If we're getting reports and we walk in here and we see the kids not wearing masks, the teachers not wearing masks, we can close your school. State gives us the power to do that. State Board of Education Department allows us to shut down these private schools. It's not just public schools. And so when we've had those situations, and I do not want to identify the school because I think, or schools, because there have been a few, and they have responded appropriately, but we continue to get occasional calls here and there saying this private school may not be following the rules. So we're gonna put that in order.
Early. Clarify with that. Does that include mask breaks that these schools allow in some cases? Would that get away with those?
We're gonna talk to the superintendents and others with regards to what works best. Sandra.
Do you have any more detailed information about the back business grants as far as how many people applied and?
I just don't have it with me.
Okay.
Peter can get you that. Okay. Any other questions?
Do you know when you're coming out with the order on the schools?
It'll probably be by the beginning of next week.
Okay.
The question was when we're coming out with the order on the schools, and it'll probably be by the beginning of next week. Thank you, everyone. It's been an hour, and we try to keep these to an hour, so I thank everyone for their participation, those at home for watching. We've done a very good job lately of stemming the tide, as I talked about. We have seen some increases in particular zip codes and areas, but in general, we're holding our own. We are concerned about some of the growth that we've seen in the rural areas of Western New York. I'll be on a conference call in a half hour with our representatives from other areas, and I know they're concerned just as well. If we continue to wear masks, if we continue to be smart, we can all be better. I know I can be better at times. And if we do that, we will get through this much better than our friends elsewhere. So to all, everyone, be safe and well. I want to thank Kendra Schmidt from Deaf Access Services, also people who do not get a lot of thanks but do a lot of work so that you can see this at home. Monica Batan and Chuck Banis are manning the electric Ford over there, and our friend Derek Smith in the back, who unfortunately will be leaving in about a couple weeks. So good luck to Derek as he moves forward in his career. But I just want to thank everyone. Be safe and well. And just one more reminder, wear a mask. And if you're a Dodger fan, put your hat on because we won the World Series for the first time in 32 years.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.